Both more legislators and our delegation, I apologize for that. What we are going to do is we are going to start at this point, well, after I call the meeting order, we'll very soon let you know what we're doing. We're going to start with the public hearing portion, because we do not have that form in order to hear the local bills. So with that being said, I'd like to welcome everybody here to the Borough Management and Local Bills hearing. We will have the Pledge of Allegiance led by, Commissioner Glassman. Please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Let's see all from there.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. We're going to have the welcoming from the city of Tamarack. Unfortunately, Mayor Calabisco is out of town for her mother's funeral. My Vice Mayor Michelle Gomez will give you the welcoming remarks. Please come forward.
Good evening and thank you. We welcome you here. On behalf of the city of Tamarack, I'd like to introduce my colleague, Commissioner Pamela Bushnell. Our members are already standing. And we have Commissioner Diane Glassman. So thank you very much. Our captain, Neil Glassman, and our city manager, Michael Thomas. Thank you very much. And we wish everybody a happy holidays.
Thank you very much. Thank you for hosting us. We appreciate it very much. What we will do at this point is just have a roll call at this point. Faith, could you please call the roll?
Senator Chen?
Here.
Senator Sobel?
Here.
Senator Spatz?
Yes, here.
Senator Brennan? Representative Flaherty?
Here.
Representative Bryant? Representative Thurston? Representative Rogers?
Here.
Representative Moskowitz? Representative Edwards?
Here.
Representative Schwartz? Representative Gibbons? Representative Jones?
Here.
Representative Pritchett? Representative Diaz? Representative Stark? Representative Trujillo? Senator Rain? Representative Long?
Here. Okay, so we do not have one at this time, but when we do get one, then we'll be able to hear the local bills. At this time, I would like to welcome some of our other elected officials who are here. County Commissioner Lois Wexler is here. Commissioner Lamarca is here. We've got Commissioner Thomas Dorsett from West Park. Our special guest, Representative Rich Workman, who serves in the legislature with us. If you'd like to say any words, of course, you're always welcome to. And if we could use you as a forum member, we would. I just want you to know everything I know about running the meeting. I went from the chairman here, chairman of Finance and Tax, in the House. I'd like to also make an announcement that there are two big round boxes near the back entrance doors for the deposit of toys and other items for Family Central. So if anybody came with any toys or knows anybody who has any toys, please have them bring them over here. At this point, and then we do have, there was somebody else, representing the Chief Financial Officer, Jeff Atwater, is Kathy Salerno. Kathy, where is she? Thank you. Are there any other elected officials or anybody else who wants to introduce that I can introduce? Seeing none, what we will do is we will, at this point, move to the speakers that we have. listed for the public hearing. Now, I'm fearful, of course, if I start with Desiree Giles Smith, that I might lose one senator a little bit later, but that being said, I know how anxious he is to hear his wife speak, so I'm going to call on her, even though it's out of order. So, Desiree, would you please come up? She's Deputy City Manager of City of Harlem.
Hello, and thank you all for having us here today. The City of Lauderdale sure appreciate the hospitality of the Broward delegation and the City of Cameron, one of our sister cities. Today we're here to talk about what Lauderdale is saying, neighborhood common, a state neighborhood bill, and what we'd like for this bill to do is to bond. It's Senate Bill 510, House Bill 351. It came before legislature last year, and Representative Jones was the heavy lifting of the House, and Senator Wade sponsored it in the Senate, and it came close to passing, but unfortunately it did not. So we're bringing it back, and it's pretty much asking for the same thing, allowing safe neighborhood districts to bond. Safe neighborhood districts basically are deep in the districts. They allow neighborhoods the opportunity to improve themselves. Is safety enhancement, be it guard gates, be it fixing their roads, be it putting in an additional police officer. These are things that it provides. The funds are pledged and voted upon by the residents of the district. They don't receive any additional outside funding. They pay for everything themselves. These districts are used by the city as a vehicle for the residents to make the improvements that they need. All the money, all the funds, the residents, the budgets, the auditing is all done by the city. So that way there is no dispute over how the funds are expended. We follow all of the same state purchasing laws that are required in municipalities and in district office. So basically what we'd like to do is to allow the district to bond. We ask you to do three things. One, is to make this one of your legislative priorities. Secondly, we'd like you to consider us co-sponsoring it. And thirdly, when we come up to Tallahassee, or if we're in the district, we'd like to come and talk to you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Are there any other comments? We are trying to limit everybody to 3 minutes, but certainly if there's any other comments. Okay, are there any questions? Senator Smith, did you have any questions? Am I allowed to the flag for the day? This one of the BCS game when I'm instructed to answer that question.
No. I would like to know what
Representative Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to encourage my colleagues to support this type of initiative that is local and it is engaging our communities, engaging our residents. I know when the legislature passed this bill years ago, we felt it was the best tool for local government, and I can assure you the City of Lauderdale Lakes is a pioneer in making the Safe Neighborhoods program work. And they're extending it to so that it can allow for that community to bond themselves, and with some permission from the cities, of course. I heard the discussion at City Commission meeting. I saw it on the agenda, so I made sure I showed up so I could get a full understanding. So, Senator, I just know you will co-sponsor or continue to carry this bill in the Senate, and I look forward to supporting this initiative in the House as the primary co-sponsor. So, thank you, Debbie, and welcome to ensure you carry this bill.
What was it? Did you know what the bill number is?
351 in the House and 510 in the Senate.
There are
multiple districts throughout the state. Orange County, we're working with them on the bill and some other places in the state that have the safe neighborhood improvement districts.
There's more chance that a woman in the house than there is here, so.
I think it's more likely to be passed if it was local, though. Do you need this to locally, to fund locally?
Yes.
Because it's governed by the statute, the city needs something locally, will still, it's prohibited by the statute, and will still have, so we have to modify the statute, and that's the statewide.
Thank you so much for that clarification.
Thank you. Any other questions?
But since, you know, in the case of bill that passed the Senate last year, passed it 4-0, and then the House was stalled, it wasn't heard, I guess, in the early committees in the House, and there were a few concerns, but I know they're working hard to get it heard at least in the House, so we should have a safe path to the Senate, and the House members can really work with the city. How would it get through the House?
Thank you. See what we can do, and try to move along. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Next, we're going to go to Leah Sokolowski, who's the president of Film Corps. Come forward, so you're here. I don't see her. Okay, we're going to move then to Bob Swindell, president and CEO for the Fort Lauderdale Alliance. Come on down.
Apologies, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to get in position after the previous speaker.
We want to keep that on your toes, that's why we're here.
I appreciate that, and I respect your time, the other speakers. I will put my comments the 3 minutes. But Chairman Wallman, thank you so much for the opportunity. And Lisa, thank you so much for helping make this happen. I hate to say this, but in 10 years of the Alliance, I think this is the first time we've come to the Broward delegation to talk during your economic development transportation period. And without the opportunity was here, we wanted to capitalize on that. I'd also like to thank two commissioners here in the audience, both Commissioner Chip Lamarca and Commissioner Lois Wexler, who have served on the Alliance Board over the years and really helped get the Alliance where it's at today. We are the officially signed development organization for Broward County, designated by the Broward County Commissioners. Essentially, we have four things that we need to do really well as an economic development organization. First thing is market promote Broward as a destination. We have a great fund brand as a county, but we don't necessarily have a great business identity. So our job is to help improve on that. If you looked at our trend in the October issue, you would have seen a 42-page profile on Broward County. This was us working with Florida Trend, putting together a profile of Broward County that went out not only to Florida Trend's subscription subscribers of Florida, but also nationally. A lot of business people with key tabs on Florida subscribers of Florida Trend. Another example of advertising is Inc. Magazine, Inc. 500, probably the most widely read issue of Inc. Magazine. Each year for the last 3 years, we've taken on a full-page ad. Town of Broward County is a great business destination, featuring one of the best recognized entrepreneurs in Isaac. We also recognize the Broward County companies that are on the 500 list. So, great opportunity again to get visibility for Broward County. We work with companies that are in the county as well as attraction. Sometimes you're better known for the companies you attract, but you may have read this week that American Express has decided to reinvest in the workforce in Broward County, building a new campus in Sunrise, over $7 million project. Great opportunity for the employees at American Express, new technology, state-of-the-art workplaces that allow them to remain competitive on a global scale. Great to see a company like American Express, who's been here for 40 years, reinvesting in Broward employees. The other things you have to do really well in addition to marketing and promoting is manage projects, which we do in American Express as an example of that. We do that market research, and most importantly, working with other private partners like the City of Tamarack, Workforce One. I'm proud to say that Broward County, for the last consecutive 12 months, has had the lowest unemployment rate in the county of the state of Florida. At 5.3%, we have the lowest unemployment rate in the county of the state. And in our thought, that's what validates our unique collaborative model that we have for economic development in Broward County. So again, thank you very much for the time today. I really appreciate the opportunity to have any questions.
Look at that, we threw you off, we actually added another 2 minutes. Start going yellow and then went back and you know what was going on. But Representative Edwards didn't have a question. If you did have any other further comments that you didn't get to, please feel free to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to know if the Alliance has a position on gaining expansion in Broward County.
We do not.
No, we're not used to those kind of. You really got the point. Thank you, Senator Sol.
Thank you very much. So you're not here to ask for any money or anything like that?
No, ma'am. We definitely advocate for the state incentive programs. There's legislation that has sponsored the past. You can be very conservative for our county, how we use incentives. But it's very important that we continue to have a toolbox for us to work with. The other thing that I would ask is that, you know, one of the ways we market Broward County is we produce a television commercial land in the New York market. Right about now, it's really chilly up there. So in the months of November, December, January, February, we market Broward County for the television commercial. That costs us $10,000 a month. Enterprise Florida needs to help build the business branch of the entire state of Florida. Again, as a state, we have a great fund grant. Last year, we were playing ask for the legislative process. I'd ask you to look at that. We think it's important that we put $25,000 of our local budget to support a branding program for the entire state of Florida. We think a strong Florida makes for a strong region in South Florida, and also makes for a strong county.
I couldn't agree with you more that incentives are important because when a competitive market in the United States, especially in the film industry. However, we need to be accountable for the taxpayers' money to make sure that we're giving money to an appropriate group that will get a return on investment. My question to you now is, you're basically speaking through Enterprise Florida in that role. What role did you play in keeping American Express here in Broward County, if any, or was it Enterprise Florida? I'm just curious because they moved from, I think, Weston to Sunrise.
And so I'll start with, first of all, they have a few locations in Broward. They have in the Weston area, they have a 300-person printing facility that prints statements, but now most of the stuff is taken online, so there's less and less need for printed statements. There's also facilities in Plantation where they've been for the longest time. Their new location will be in Sunrise, and they're buying a 40-acre paper parcel to build this campus. So we are, in addition to being the economic development organization appointed by Broward County also appoints us to be the leading organization within Broward County for Enterprise Florida. So any project that gets state incentives in Broward County is worked through us. So we work with the companies, we work with, they have a consultant who's working with them. The American Express Project, they have a consultant as well. But we work with them, and work with the state of Florida, bringing the package together, and working with the city of Sunrise. Alan Cohen, who's the city manager, is also a new board member of the Alliance, did a phenomenal job on the city side, working with his team, and putting together an attractive package. You know, I always say that the incentives are not like a bad location, a good location. They're designed to influence decisions. They have to be used properly. Accountability is a vital part of it. We're using tax dollars, and we're sensitive to that. So we tend to be very conservative. But we can influence the company's decision to stay in Broward County or to expand or relocate to Broward. And incentives will influence that decision. That's when you try to use that strategically.
Thank you, sir. This is interesting. Please.
It's interesting to you, it's interesting to us.
Did we give any tax incentives to American Express?
Yes, ma'am.
From Broward County?
Not from Broward County. So the one of the challenges, and I've discussed this with Representative Givens, we don't do a lot as a state for retention. You know, so we have a company from outside of our state coming out of one of our big companies. You know, our incentives are revolving around job growth, and believe me, job growth is you know, what kept me up at night, and I sleep a little more soundly since we have lower unemployment than any other county in Florida. But we don't have a good incentive structure for existing companies to retain them. And I would make the argument, and I've talked to others at Enterprise Florida, that we want to, if you're going to reward a behavior, you want to influence the decision from a company. Looking at companies' capital investment is an important feature of what they're doing. So if they're reinvesting in their employees, bringing in new equipment, they may not have necessarily add jobs, but it prevents them from cutting jobs. And I think, you know, retention and keeping the companies here for jobs is important. So American Express is making a significant investment in new technology, state-of-the-art workplaces. So their 3,200 employees in Broward County in South Florida will be more competitive on a global level. So the incentives they got from the state of Florida was for capital investment. Because their project was so significant, they were able to get what's called capital investment tax credit, or CITC. And that leverage is that if they have an obligation for the corporate income tax, and that's the only tax that's looked at for that incentive, but if they have a corporate income tax, or a liability, that incentive can be used against that as a tax, for tax credit.
So keeping the employees here, and that's what's happening. But there won't be new employees, or there might be.
There'll be some new employees, but with 3,200, and making the move, you've got 100 new employees, but that's.
100 new employees?
Yes.
Thank you. Representative Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How do you?
I'm doing real well, Representative Rogers.
Kristen, I know you are the economic development on the county.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and you're cooperating with more than there are lines?
Yes.
Okay, I'm always puzzled as to why the name was changed. You're a Broward County delegation, or county commissioners are called Broward County Commissioners, if my economic development arm is Fort Lauderdale. And it's Fort Lauderdale. So maybe you can explain, do you have partners from other cities, other than the major cities participating with the greater Fort Lauderdale lines?
Thank you for asking the question. You know, about 5 years ago, we wanted to benchmark where Broward County was, what the perception was of Broward County, and the leaders all over the country. So we hired an external organization to do some polling for us, and talked to key opinion leaders, editors from business magazines, site location advisors, you know, a key group of people that we consider our audience and want to get in front of. And one of the questions, a few of the questions were, have you recommended projects in Broward County? What's your perception of Broward County? Have you done projects in Broward County? And the folks with the survey, literally 2 days into the survey, called the office and said, we need you to answer a question for us. When we ask these questions to these companies, typically we bring them to the phone and dead silence. And then they'll say, well, Fort Lauderdale, oh, why didn't you say Fort Lauderdale in the first place? So what happened was they would go back and say, well, is that where the rock is blocked? But no, that's for Broward, that's where Representative Brooke is from. That's not Broward, that's for Broward, we're a little south, we're between Miami Dade and Palm Beach. I mean, there's a county between Minnesota, Miami Dade, and Palm Beach and together. So what we found was that the identity was really around, and the brand equity was around Fort Lauderdale. I think Nikki Grossman is probably one of the best commission visitor bureaus, CEOs in the country. She's been branding Fort Lauderdale, Broward County, as Greater Fort Lauderdale since their inception. And I think she's done a phenomenal job and really created a brand for our community. And pretty much the consultant said, you can spend millions of dollars and not get the brand that you have for Fort Lauderdale. So the challenge to us was, because we are countywide, and as I mentioned, city manager Sunrise is on our board. We have several cities that are members of the Alliance. Beautiful City of Tamarack is a member of the Alliance. So we have cities that voluntarily joined the Alliance and issue our partner council. And the case we made to them was, here is the data that we've asked these folks that we're trying to get to as an audience. And if our job is to market and promote our county as a product, probably should look here at what we call as long as you can come to the area with ourselves and our store. And that's what we've been able to do for Greater Fort Lauderdale. We surveyed those same folks 3 years later after our television marketing campaign and the print ads we've been doing. The visibility for Greater Fort Lauderdale/Broward County went through the roof. Huge difference. Now part of that was our marketing, but again, the other part was the shift. And trust me, your colleagues in the county commission had had concerns with changing the name. When I became CEO of the Alliance, the first person I went to go visit was Mayor Bowler down in Hollywood. Because I wanted him to be confident that, you know, we had spent the last 10 years building a countywide reputation, working with all the cities in Broward County, giving everybody a fair shot at a project. I wanted him to understand that that was not going to change. You know, some of the things I see in our partner council, which has been pretty vibrant for the last 10 years, is now I see cities referring projects to one another. Say, you know, we're the city of Coral Springs, we don't have a facility that matches what this company needs, but hey, Tamarack and Weston, you may have something that fits, you should talk to this company. And that's the level of collaboration we've got now among our cities and county development offices in our cities. That we want to keep the project, we want to have a project in South Florida, and if it doesn't fit for one city, let's find a city where we can find a school facility for that company.
Representative Parker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for being here. I have two questions in different areas. One is in the school system. How are you meshing with the school system? Because we know that the jobs that you want to bring here require a certain level of education. What is your relationship with these school systems?
Well, I can't thank you enough for asking that question, Representative. We work very closely with Superintendent Muncy. He's actually a board member of the Alliance as well. I'll give some specific examples. We work with the superintendent of schools, the president of our college, David Armstrong, and Citrus to create a program for our high schools, a pilot for the entire state of Florida called the LEO Project. That stands for Linking Education with Employment Outcomes. And it's program, project-based learning. The first school we rolled out was Park High School. Todd Mace, the principal at MacArthur, one of the most innovative principals we have in Broward County. And Sean Aycock, who was a graduate of Dean Boyd Anderson, her dad was my principal. She's the principal of Hollow Middle School, which is a feeder school in MacArthur. And the way this works is two classes of sixth graders and two classes of ninth graders in middle school and senior high school. And they'll continue through this program for the 3 years of middle school and the 4 years of high school. But we're working to bring mentors into the classroom. The students at MacArthur, so they can pick any project they want. And, you know, and their instructor, Justin, pretty much said to them, you know, you guys figure out what project you want to work on. Well, the school spirit at MacArthur has gotten so strong that they found that they had four students sharing a music instrument for their band. I mean, they just don't have enough instruments to go around. So the students said, okay, well, this is a problem. So they went to Justin, the teacher, and said, well, what do we do? Justin said, well, you figure it out. You got the internet to figure this. So these ninth graders went out on the internet and found that there's a foundation called the Charles Lucas Foundation. And they applied for a grant and they provide money for band instruments. So the students themselves, with Justin providing a little bit of oversight, got the grant application, completed the grant application. They were in the top three to get the funding. But lo and behold, they won the grant. And this was all done by ninth grade students. They won a $45,000 grant for new band instruments from MacArthur High School. That's one tangible example of what's happening in the LEO program. We've got business people that are working with those students. The students are phenomenal, but it's really helping the students with communication skills. You know, maybe a text is the best way to talk to somebody, you know, a partner on your team, especially if it's a delicate thing to discuss, you need to do it face-to-face. But that's how these teams work. Their classrooms are designed to be very much like a current-day workplace would be. So the tables move, the chairs move, the whiteboards move around. They've all got technology with fingertips, they've got laptops they work on them. But the idea of the LEO program is to create an environment that might be very much like what you see at Citrix. And then you can do field trips at places like Citrix and other technology companies in Broward County. That program is now going to 9 schools, it's going to go to Thatcher. I can't recall the others off the top of my head. We're actually going for a grant right now for a $7 million federal grant that will help us scale this project even further in Broward County. We do marketing with Broward County schools. Every year we do a profile of all of our public high schools. We think that there's a perception out there that exists about education in Broward County that's not accurate. I'm a graduate of Broward County Public Schools. I know we have room for improvement, but I know we have a lot of great programs going on right now. And our job is economic development organizations to tell that story. So we publish quick facts on Broward County Public Schools twice a year, and we just pull out 4 things that business people should know about their public school system. And U.S. Central Report ranks 5 of Broward County's high schools as the best in the nation. I mean, those kind of data points, business people need to be able to talk about those.
And now we're going to move on because if we do this, we're going to be here all day. But thank you very much, Mr. Swindell. I really appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, thank you so much for the opportunity. I really appreciate you all. Have a very nice holiday season and look forward to seeing you all in Tallahassee at some point.
Thank you. Take care. Doug Smith, Assistant City Manager, City of Marketing. Please come on.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not Doug Smith. I'm David Spears and I represent the City of Marquette, but I didn't want to introduce Doug. He's new to Broward County, comes to us from Delray Beach, and we're delighted to have him here in Broward County. He's still on the way from Delray. I'm working with him on Marquette's legislative program, and he's here to explain some of the things on their wish list. I mean, appreciate you giving us this time.
Well, my pleasure. My district, so we're going to do whatever we got tonight.
Mr. Chairman and members of the delegation, thanks for the opportunity to meet with you this afternoon. Here on behalf of the City of Marquette, as Mr. Sitterson was mentioning, our City Commission recently adopted a set of state legislative priorities for the 2014 session, and we provide a copy of our priorities document to you. I wanted to just highlight a few of the items related specifically to today's hearing on economic development, transportation, and environmental issues. Regarding economic development issues, the city supports establishment of the Urban Infill and Redevelopment Assistance Grant Program to provide grants to local government, and also supporting state economic development resources for small businesses, such as for technical assistance, access to capital, public infrastructure, and urban infill as well. For transportation issues, the city supports legislation that preserves local control of transportation planning and provides opportunities for additional revenue options for infrastructure projects. And for environmental issues, the city supports legislation that enables local governments to retain necessary tools to comply with water quality standards and water supply, planning, development, and source protection. Regarding environmental issues, an issue that the city opposes is legislation that requires municipal utilities to sell water or wastewater service outside of their corporate limits to be regulated by the Public Service Commission. The city of Margate currently provides water and wastewater utility service to a portion of the city of Coconut Creek. And this is just a brief summary of a few of the items specifically related to today's hearing, but on behalf of the city, I'd like to encourage your consideration of our position on these issues and the other issues that are outlined in the priorities document. And I again want to thank you for the time and being able to speak with you today, and thank you for the work that you do for our communities.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? No questions, just one. Welcome once again to Broward County, or I guess the Greater Fort Lauderdale area.
Thank you again very much.
Really love that. Good. Nobody kept talking and nobody listened in, you know? Okay. We're going to move on to Community Advocacy Network. Donna Berger couldn't be here. She's had a replacement.
Thank you, Representative Wall, and members of the Broward delegation. My name is Julie Fishman, and I am the Governmental Affairs Liaison for the Community Advocacy Network, and for short. Donna Berger, I'm Executive Director, says her regrets for not being able to speak to you herself. However, she was unavoidably called away on a business matter. I'm here today to make you aware of who we are and what CAN does. As you may already be aware, CAN advocates on behalf of more than 4,000 shared interest communities throughout our state. CAN is governed by a volunteer advisory council, which includes individuals active in the community association arena, and they help guide CAN's legislative agenda each year. CAN is dedicated to educating and assisting the millions of Floridians who live in common interest ownership communities, with the primary purpose of protecting and preserving their unique lifestyle. CAN recently held our very popular board member boot camp in Bonita Springs, which is an active training session which provides certification for board members and association managers. We had approximately 200 attendees who were willing to give us the majority of a Saturday to learn best practices for operating their communities. Our next board member boot camp will be held in Margate on March 15th. Board member boot camp is a free class which covers material from the time an owner is thinking about running for the board all the way through to handling conflicts within their community and much, much more. We also offer a variety of other classes free of charge to board members around the state, many times bringing these classes to them if they cannot make it to our Law and Learning campus in Margate. While CAN has a strong focus on education, we are primarily an advocacy organization, and as such, we will be monitoring the bills in Tallahassee that will impact our members. During the 2013 legislative session, CAN monitored over 100 bills moving through the process that would have had a direct or indirect impact on over 1 million Floridians who live in shared interest communities. Our 2014 legislative agenda, which is being sponsored this year by Senator Ring and Representative Moraitis, includes the turning over of an association's official records within 5 days of not being reelected, the use of technology for board members to attend meetings, the use of emails for board members to communicate with each other,
I appeal the same emergency powers that a condominium association board has to cooperative associate and homeowner associations and joint sever liability for all associations. And we'll be forwarding additional information on our legislative agenda as soon as we have finalized it. I thank you for allowing me to present to you and would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much for your time. Any questions, Representative Rogers?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How are you?
Very good.
Very good to see you as always. I have a question for you to advance your priorities this year.
Yes.
I know what I'm hearing from the Fair Use Association, the condos, the homeowners associations, that the boards are majority, if your board is majority non-US citizen, meaning they are from other parts of the country, totally controlled. And I'm hearing that meetings are being held in different languages at board meetings. So I don't know if you're hearing that when you have your management or those folks engaged in training. And when do you talk to, do you have folks that do not live here year-round participating and getting the education that they need, considering they are not here all year-round and they are the majorities on these boards? So we're having problems with that. Do you hear that?
We have not heard that, Representative. However, our organization, along with many other organizations throughout the state, do the educational classes throughout the year. So if they needed educational classes, they could do those classes while they are here.
Hello, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Okay. What can you do to target the associations that we know that the boards are majority of folks that are not here year-round? How do we as state legislatures deal with that issue? You can't communicate, they plan nothing until they're in town. It is a challenge. And I'm just asking, you are paying.
We would be happy to meet with your representative and see if we can together come up with a game plan on how to deal with that.
Okay. Thank you very much. We do have a forum at this time, so we are going to move back to the public hearing. We're going to take the first issue, though, we're going to take the civil citation program, which is what the bulk of you have been looking for. So I do apologize to the Parliament Annotation Boys. For those who might be here for the Coral Springs Improvement District, I should have said this before, that has been withdrawn. So if you were here for that, you do not need to stay for that because it's not going to be heard. But it was nice of you to come here and let everybody know. At this point, we will do the civil citation. The sponsor of this bill, while I was the chair of the delegation, technically, I'm the sponsor of that bill up in Tallahassee. We're going to have it presented by Representative Clark Reed, who is the sponsor of the general bill dealing with civil citations. She will make a brief statement about what the bill does. This is the first and only reading of this local bill, since there's not an annexation matter requiring two public hearings. At this point, I'd ask our delegation counsel, Gene Steinfeld, to read the bill title, Local Bill on Civil Citations.
An act relating to, bill entitled to an act relating to juvenile civil citations within Broward County requiring each law enforcement agency within Broward County commit a misdemeanor issue a civil citation or not arrest a juvenile, providing an effective date.
Thank you. At this time, what I would like to do before you open the public hearing is allow Representative Clark Reed to explain what this bill does. Representative Clark Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For those of you who are not familiar with the civil citation, there was a law passed in Tallahassee that allow civil citations to be given to youth who have not committed a non-violent, and this has non-violent, and I don't see that language, Mr. Chair, that I just mentioned. These are non-violent misdemeanors. And the ability to allow them to complete a program and not have anything show on their record as an arrest. This is a positive action that needs to be taken. I don't know how many of my other fellow legislators have had folks calling their offices in reference to the fact that they did something when they were 14 years old, 13 years old, and now they cannot get a job, they cannot get an apartment, and we want this to stop. It has to stop, and this is the reason for the civil citation.
Thank you very much, Representative Clark Reed. I will open up the public hearing at this time. Right now, I've only got five speakers who are signed up. Request that you try to finish your comments in 3 minutes. Recognize that, of course, sometimes that's difficult, but we appreciate it. At this point, the first speaker we have is County Commissioner Lois Wexler.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, delegation, Representative Clark Reed. This is a wonderful evening. You know, we're a little late, but we're a wonderful evening to be able to provide leadership for something that I know you've worked on so passionately for all of these years. The proposed bill that is in front of you this evening, as well as I believe there are a number of amendments that will be offered by somebody on this dais at some point this evening, is something that I, the Juvenile Justice Board of Broward County, the meeting I attended last week, was that meeting, the police chiefs, which are going to speak for themselves, for our sheriff's office, all the stakeholders can get our arms around with the various modifications that I believe are going to be coming forward. One of the things that the Juvenile Justice Board had asked for and did include it in it was the language about agreeing to participate in the civil citation program. Assistant State Attorney Schneider, Maria Schneider, has very diligently been working with the police chiefs and DSO to try to come up with an MOU to assist the officers that come across young people who they may not be able to locate a parent. What do we do with that youngster? What do we do with that child? Whose responsibility is that young person? And I believe that we've identified through the state attorney's office a program and a place where and how we can work that out. So we've been working very, very hard over the course of the last number of years to identify how civil citation can be offered to all children in our community, not just some children. Right now, the commitment from Sheriff Israel has been every one of his 14 municipalities that he provides law enforcement for, those officers must offer civil citation. But as you know, over half of the other cities provide their own law enforcement. And some are providing civil citation as an option, some are not. With this local option, we level the playing field and make that offer to all of our youngsters that qualify. Thank you this evening. I'm here to answer any questions. And thank you very much and happy Halloween holiday to you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Are there any questions? Senator Sobel.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Wexler. I think this is a very good program, but there's another part to it, the kind of services that these youngsters will get so that if they're given a second chance and then don't have a record, what kind of services and how do we guarantee that these services have been provided? What kind of oversight is there and who's providing it?
You can see that section three, section three of the bill references Broward County as the gatekeeper for keeping the records. You know that we're very diligent about measuring outcomes and performance. We work with the Children's Services Council of Broward County. Broward County Board of Commissioners is over $300,000 for the case, for caseworkers. There are, there's counseling, there's family support, and there is, there are opportunities for the young person to turn their behavior around. It's made very clear to them that this is the second chance, that this is an opportunity. And like you heard Representative say, unfortunately, I wish that we could fast forward when children are young and get them to realize what they do today affects their future, 10 years out, 15 years out, and try applying for a job and having to reveal that you were arrested for a minor misdemeanor. That is made very, very clear to them. And this program is offered and has to be accepted and supported by the family. And if that occurs, then his worker is assigned and counseling is a strong component of the program.
So who is actually responsible for evaluating the program? At the end of the day, it's working, it's not working. What kind of funds do we use? Is it mental health funds? Is it academic funds? What kind of programs are needed so that this youngster gets the right kind of help? Because a lot of times we don't give them the services that they actually need. And who's accountable?
I would ask that the county staff that's responsible for this particular program answer your question with the two or three not-for-profit providers that actually provide the program. The funding comes through the Children's Services Council. And I can't rattle off who the three providers are. We measure, the county measures their performance, and that the children do not reoccur. And the Children's Services Council has a very high bar for performance outcomes. And so that's all I can tell you, Senator Sobel. I don't want to say that this not-for-profit provider, that would be inappropriate for me. If you want the answer, I will call the staff person up.
We've got county coming up after you, so I'm sure that they'll probably have any questions. Representative, what's your question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak on this because what's concerning is the way that our laws are written, what's classified as a misdemeanor, what may seem to some like a silly offense, why is it classified as such? And so I would hope that through law enforcement, they're able to identify those common types of offenses and we can recalibrate either for a whole sentencing reform. PCS, which we're taking up next month, which will just the subcommittee. So I think that needs to be a big part of this conversation too, is why these kids are being brought up, because I would say with law enforcement here, I don't trust their discretion. I think sometimes an arrest maybe should not be made. And I think that there is prosecutorial abuse and penalties in this case as well. And when they come back to speak with we're having that conversation too. This is way too many kids are being arrested, period.
Your representative, Senator Sachs.
Thank you very much. Hello, I think. I've got. Thank you very much, Chairman, and thank you, Commissioner, for your passion. I can see that you care very deeply about this. A couple of things. I just want to be sure that these citations be issued only for nonviolent crimes. That is, no battery.
That's correct.
No assault.
That's correct.
Now, is there a provision that, if in fact a youngster or juvenile is cited for a battery, that they could be admitted into the program if the victim approves?
I would prefer that law enforcement answer that, but
Do they have the amendments in front of them?
No, they don't. We have not gotten to the amendments at this point.
They have a chair?
What we're going to do at this point is looking at it just in terms of the comments from public, and we will, amongst ourselves here, have that discussion based upon the comments.
And I'd like to share something, which I will hand now to your director. Assistant State Attorney, Ray Schneider, and I know from the county, though I'm not speaking this evening, correct? If you wish to have another Assistant State Attorney speak, he's more than willing to, but he's not signed up to speak.
It's quite all right. If somebody would like to speak and they're not signed up, by all means, they will be welcome to come.
My concern is this, is that under the criminal justice system, if somebody commits a felony, they can be eligible for a pretrial intervention program on a violent crime, such as a battery, where the victim says that it's okay. So if we're going to do that for adults, either circuit court or county court, then I just want to know at some point, and I can take this off the record, we can talk about it later, not off the record, but off the dais right now. We can discuss it later if the juveniles have an opportunity. And secondly, what concerns me, and this is something we can discuss later also with Representative Clark Reed, is they talk about in the documents that we have, the statute that the juvenile, this is going to be recorded into the record. And as we all know, that record is open to the internet. And whether or not we are able to release juveniles after the completion of this program, they're still going to be on the internet. They may not be on the state internet or the clerk's office, but it's going to be all over the internet. So maybe at some point I can speak with Representative Clark Reed, a new commissioner, and we can discuss these little parts that are so important because this is a great issue. I welcome it, and I think that just tweak a couple of little things in there, and it would be perfect.
The intent.
So there not to be a record ever,
ever.
That is the intent, and to avoid entering the DJJ system. That is the intent of civil citation. There is no arrest. There is no arrest, and that's where law enforcement has offered a couple of modifications to this to give a little bit of discretion to the officer on the street. And I'm not going to discuss that with you.
We're going to go forward with that. And thank you.
Thank you very much.
Because we do have some proposed amendments that are going to come based upon some of the comments that will be given tonight, as well as other comments which were given previously by the state attorney, as well as some of the sheriffs. And so we're going to try to incorporate all of that. I do want to make this statement, which I did make the statement earlier to the Chief. Chief Licata, who's here, is going to speak momentarily. Is that what we'd like to do at this point, at least what I'd like to do, is of course move this local bill forward with the commitment that this delegation will not go forward with this bill unless we get all parties to agree by the time this will be subject to a vote on the floor. And that gives us through till sometime in late April to really work it out and make sure it's something that everybody agrees to. So I make that as a delegation chair, that commitment, because of course I bring the bill forward, but I believe the rest of the delegation stands with me in saying that unless we all agree, we're not going to be doing it that way. That being said, we're going to move next to Regina Walker, the Section Manager of Broward County Human Services Department.
I just have for you a packet that shares with you a little information about civil citation programs here in Broward County. Broward County is a little unique than the other counties in that they've established what we call a coordinating agency. And that's what we do under the Department of Human Services. We coordinate with local law enforcement, with social service providers, the services in which the youth get when they're issued a civil citation.
We work with law enforcement, we work with the community, so there's uniformity and there's continuity and consistency in how it's applied from the North End of the county to the South End of the county. So one child is not getting civil citation treatment one way, one end of the county versus another. So that's what we're working to create, that continuity. The question in terms of data integrity, my office is the one who tracks a lot of that data. It's not into the JJIS system, the citations are not in there, they come directly through our office. We maintain them, we track the kids, we oversee the case management. We partner with Children's Services Council, there's about 8 providers. They do a lot of monitoring, they do oversight. We also come behind and we do oversight, so we work for these kids. It's a short-term program. But we ensure that these kids get intervention services on the front end. As far as the victim, a part of that intervention is restorative justice, where they're involved with victims. There's letter of apologies, there's community service, there's a lot of different services that there's substance abuse. We work with them and families, family-focused intervention process that we do with the children to try to catch and prevent that behavior so it doesn't enter them into the system first. So it is a comprehensive program, it's a new program. We're trying to get a handle on it, getting everybody on board. Most of the law enforcement are on board. I just was sitting yesterday with Timber Pines, you look at the data with them when they first started, they are fully on board. It's just getting uniformity and how we're going to apply it in the processes. The other thing I have is a packet, I have a copy of our brochure, but I also wanted to share with you the cost that's associated with this program and the safety of an assessment in which cost about $5,000 to process a kid through the juvenile justice system versus $386 for civil citation. That's a huge savings when you look at it. Over the 2-year period that we've been tracking it, this crowd kind of could save over $14 million. That's a lot. And then when we look at the data, I just had some samples of reports in which we captured the you many do know about disproportionate minority and how kids are perhaps targeted. We track that by ethnicity, by race, by kids, so we can see who's being issued a civil citation, where, so we can have that comprehensive data and we can determine if there's that TMC taking place in Broward County. So we're seeing right now kids are being issued a civil citation, but the process in which they evaluate, monitor, or they determine TMC for detention and incarceration is a little different than how you would do civil citation. So what we are seeing is a proportionate number of kids being issued, minority kids being given the opportunity of civil citation.
Thank you. Representative Edwards, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your presentation. You look at here the cost comparison, and members are looking at the Broward County taxpayers could have saved over $14 million. I'm wondering why we're not using those funds to integrate these types of programs into school settings to benefit all of our Broward County public school system, as those that have an interaction with law enforcement. Is that part of the equation?
Well, I would hope that we look at the savings that could stem from this and that we get put in the front end for prevention programs. But this is showing what could have been realized over the 2 years, but because a lot of these kids that were eligible were issued citations, it cost that much money.
You mean were arrested?
That were arrested.
Opposed to you are Representative Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I hope in your evaluation of this team that you would believe that we're keeping children out of this penal system. That in itself is enough for all of us. So for this rec, that is what I'm hoping that you will be able to tell me over a period of time, you know, where we are with this. But can you tell me the cities that are not currently participating?
Right now, City of Hollywood is not issuing civil citations. We're not, most of the other law enforcement agencies are issuing citations. We just have what we're going to do a better job. We don't get a lot of the data from the City of Fort Lauderdale.
So I can't really give you any information on that because they kind of serve their own coordinating entities. It's not in fault of Broward County and it's intended for hope to be. So those are basically the two that I can say at this point. They've got four problems. They are issuing citations. They are doing the civil citation program. It's just the county is not, we're not able to give you accurate data as it relates to their activity, as I can show with all the other law enforcement agencies.
Follow up, Representative Lynch?
Thank you. And if, since we're taking this to the legislature, and if that is a problem, because when we are evaluating, we want to make sure we're getting accurate data. And if we're relying on the county for such, then everyone should be participating at the same level. So the language, the conversation, I would like for that to be incorporated to mandate that all of us who participate and provide the county with information.
And just to add a comment to you about the data performance that you can look at, we are tracking the number of kids that are in our program. You can see right now the kids that are actually enrolled in our program. We're at about 87% completing the program. We're in the process of now being able to give you some data within the next 6 months, what that success rate is, and we'll do that over 6, 12, 18 month period as far as the number of kids that we've been versus not.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, let me compliment you on keeping track of ethnicity data because that was the only way we were able to pass the primary seatbelt law in Tallahassee to prove there's no racial profile. Unless you have that data, you cannot prove there's no racial profile or people are being treated disparately. So thank you for tracking that data. Keep track of that data because it helps when we go to Tallahassee. We're trying to pass this legislation, and if you get a lot of support, we can provide that kind of information to prove that we have things in place to make sure that everybody's treated fairly. So thank you very much.
And the other thing I want to say too about that is about the local bill is continuity, as I say, for us to be able to ensure that children who serve, there's been discussion in law enforcement, that the kids that are for our local ones, the kids that are issued citations, we're looking at any kids who live in the Tri-County area because that way we ensure we can monitor the delivery of services. If they were in another part of the state, you know, the level of service that we can't really track them as well as we could do within the Tri-County state. So that's another thing that we were discussing in the media.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your commitment trying to help all children to stay out of the criminal justice system. It's an important first step. I'm wondering what services are you tracking? What are you keeping in mind? What does your data include?
Well, right now, I've
looked
at the number of citations that are issued. We look at the social service providers and the level of success that they have with the children. When kids come in, there's an assessment done at the onset of when they come to the program. So there's a risk factor that we do with the kids to determine what their needs are.
Who does that?
That's my office. Well, right now that's through DJJ. But we're hoping to be able to secure those services. So that from that point, we then look and speak with the parent, and then we refer that kid to the appropriate service provider. And that provider then goes into a more intensive assessment based on the family and the children's and the child's needs.
Is there a minimum number of hours that this individual would need to get in order to come up for
that's going to be based on the provider, it's going to be based on the child. But what's happened, because this is a short-term program, they're going to go through the minimum
short-term.
It's somewhat of a 45 to 90-day program, so citation. However, if there's a need that goes beyond that, so the child will be retained and going through CSD, they're committed to working with that kid and that family to continue those services beyond this will, the window that we have. So we really look at the needs of the child and the family and determine what's best for that child.
Thank you, Ms. Walker. We're going to move on to appreciate you being here. Chief Ross Nakata, who is the president of the Broward Chiefs Police. Chief Police, go ahead.
Chief.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the delegation. I'm here on behalf of the County Chiefs and Police Association. I'd just like to say, first of all, that I think I speak for most, if not all, of our chiefs in saying that we all agree that first time juveniles commit minor misdemeanor offenses deserve a second chance. And we're not opposed to the civilization program. There are, however, some exceptions to the proposed bill that we believe are important that need to be considered. In a case where a juvenile commits a domestic battery, the state requires that police officers take that child and possibly make an arrest for a cooling off period. That's a requirement. We also believe that there are exceptional circumstances, and when juveniles are committing violent crimes, or even violent misdemeanors, or cases that pose a danger to public safety, that law enforcement should have the ability and the discretion to make an arrest and in lieu of a civil citation. The way it was written, the proposal originally was that all misdemeanors were qualified for that. I don't think that that's what was intended at the state by the law enforcement, that that's not the case here in Broward County as well. And then finally, one of the issues that we have is that there are occasions when we encounter a juvenile where a civil citation is warranted. A juvenile may be eligible for a civil citation. However, law enforcement is unable to make contact with an adult parent or a responsible guardian. And because of the circumstances of the incident, we don't feel comfortable due to liability in just having 12 or 13 or 15 year olds sign off on a civil citation without parental authority and releasing that child when it could potentially pose some liability to the city and pose public safety or risk to that child to get released without parental supervision. Several of the issues that were raised are addressed in the amendment. Some of which are not. Some of the biggest issues is having a place to take a child. And there has been some discussion with the sheriff's office, discussion about a memo of understanding that if law enforcement did encounter a child that was eligible for civil citation, we would be able to, if we could make contact with the parent, arrest that child, take him to the JAF Center, and then the sheriff and his representative would unarrest that child and release them to the parent or the guardian when they come to pick them up and issue a civil citation. We're not opposed to that. But there has to be a mechanism in place that allows us to do that because we can't just release a young child due to liability reasons. It doesn't stipulate in the bill that this is not intended for violent and serious misdemeanor cases, which was the case in the state. And speaking with Mrs. Walker from Broward County, we have one last issue which came up after we had our discussions prior to the meeting today was that they believe that there should be a limitation to the tri-county area here. If we encounter a juvenile, for instance, that's from the panhandle of Tallahassee, it's going to be difficult for Broward County to put somebody through a civil citation program for monitoring when they may be just here visiting for a short period of time and they're going to be leaving shortly thereafter to an area outside of our immediate area for that child to be properly monitored and put through a civil citation program as been designed here in Broward County.
Thank you very much. I do believe, and I know there's been referenced a couple of times in the non-violent portion, I do believe, though, that that issue was defined in section, for statute 95-12, and that was the intent of the way it was supposed to have been drafted, that it incorporated who would be eligible for the program. So it certainly is the intent, but then the language, as you said, does not fully
That's what the intent is. We'll make sure that the left hand is the floor, it has the correct language.
It's spelled out by state statute, we just want to make sure that that was.
So then that's the intent. Okay, thank you. Senator Smith, you have a question?
This may be, Chief, this may be a little off, but practice kind of wrong. Domestic battery, one of mine, he said something about it, that's a minor domestic battery. Would that put on siblings fighting each other, kids getting arrested, and my two sons are in the front yard fighting each other in off staff and seal? Can they be arrested for that?
Well, I think two family members horsing around and fighting and getting into a little altercation wouldn't necessarily necessitate an arrest, but one sibling caused some serious injury to the other. The officers were able to determine who the aggressor was, the initiator of that incident, and it could be a requirement for a physical arrest. Yes.
Thank you. Senator Smith, I'm really glad that you brought that issue up because I think that's really at the core of this. These individuals who have schoolyard fights, for example, I know there have been instances I've had constituents. I myself have been involved in instances where I've had someone assault me in my own home. And the police are there to observe what happened in that first instance. And what they make the assumption and say, well, you guys are both telling me two different stories, so both of you are jailed and pursuing the press charges. That's not helping the victim or the aggressor. What I go back to are those domestic battery or domestic abuse instances. I think those are the individuals who do need the anger management classes to need intervention. But because of the way that this is structured, those individuals, as I read this, are going to be arrested and they're going to be charged with a misdemeanor. And those are, I believe, the ones that really do need the help that we're trying to catch at the onset. And that's who's left out in this program, as I see the civil citation program. So I don't believe that when you all say, you know, two siblings fighting or someone fighting in a schoolyard, you don't have the resources of the officers to see their every instance and be able to determine who the aggressor is and let them go. I just don't believe that. I know that.
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying it's easy to make that determination. When you respond to a house and you have two people, family members that are involved in a domestic situation, an officer has to use his investigative techniques to try and come to some sort of conclusion. But if a family member is assaulted and injured and hurt as a result of a domestic battery situation, the purpose for that statute is to provide a safe haven for the person that's being victimized, and that's why it authorizes the arrest of the offending party.
Senator Sachs.
Thank you. I think, look, this is what we're trying to achieve. What we're trying to achieve is that, thank you, Mr. Chairman, we're trying to achieve is that kids who get into trouble before they're 18, and it's a situation where this is not such a serious crime, where they would be charged as an adult. These are juveniles who are committing offenses against our laws that are still considered juvenile law. That, in effect, what our mission is here, is to be sure they don't have a record of the rest of their lives. Now, when I've been a prosecutor, it was many years ago that anything you committed as a crime, as a juvenile, would be expunged. We all remember that. Many of us, some of the younger people don't remember that. Okay, maybe Mr. Waltman, I remember that. But so this is what we want to achieve. We want to achieve juveniles who can grow up and maybe get into trouble with juvenile law, not serious adult crimes, juvenile law, and be able to become law-abiding citizens and look back and say, you know what, I did screw up as a kid. But now I've learned my lesson. So what we're really talking about here is explaining the record. And I think that this is something that we need to be caught in. Otherwise, we're going to find all these no exceptions. You know, and I'll tell you the truth. A juvenile who commits a crime with his victim, and that juvenile is not eligible for this program, is at a disadvantage to an adult who commits a battery. Because if an adult commits battery and the victim agrees, that this adult can go into this program. I'm not talking 18 to 19 years old, all right? Juvenile 18 would not be eligible for this program. An adult at 19 would be eligible for this program, because an adult would be eligible for going into pretrial intervention, getting approval, and coming out with a clean record, the ability to be able to expunge it. So I think what we need to have a conversation, and all of us here who are interested in this, is can we convince the legislature to go back to the days when a juvenile commits a crime and goes through a program or whatever we can do to help these kids, then they come out with a clean record once they become an adult? Because isn't this the way that we all want it to be? You know, you get the first bite of the apple. And in fact, there's a couple of senators who really committed some tough issues, some tough crimes when they were kids, got a break from a judge, and is a sitting senator, and is very proud of that. Senator Mike Bennett, we spoke about it all the time. If a judge, and he put the judge's letter up on the wall in the Senate office, so I don't want to go on and on about this, but at some point, we as a legislative delegation need to discuss this and see if we can do something about it.
Thank you, Senator. You know what I'm going to do? Just want to put this on here, because we did, a while ago, we put the voluntary annexation on hold to take up this, but we do have a quorum now that can vote on the voluntary annexation. I don't want to keep them waiting too much longer. We're going to go back to that. The voluntary annexation is a parkland annexation, Watercrest to Standard Pacific. At this point, I'd like to speak to us on that. Laura, will you come forward? Mr. Stephen, where?
Yes, Sharon. Good evening. I'm Steve Reary. I'm here with Greenspoon Marker on behalf of Standard Pacific and the City of Parkland for this voluntary annexation. The City of Parkland on October 2nd passed the second reading of the ordinance, ordinance number 2013-18, pursuant to Chapter 171.044 of Board Statutes, to voluntarily annex a 43-acre piece of property into the City of Parkland. This is located in the Wedge area. The annexation is consistent with the city's comprehensive plan. The impact, cost impact to the city will be zero, actually. The impact fees will be paid for by the property owner, and utilities have already been extended to the Watercrest subdivision, which is what this property was proposed to be annexed into and incorporated into, or to the extent that those utilities or infrastructure elements like streets, for example, haven't yet been constructed, the property owner will pay for those items. As well, we've reached out to departments within the county to determine whether there's any impact to county employees, and we've heard back that there will be zero employee displacements as a result of this voluntary annexation. And we're here to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Just to let everybody know, annexation only need to be heard by a quorum. A vote is not taken on them. However, if anybody objects to the bill moving forward, then a local bill would have to be filed to move the annexation forward. I'd like to further add, this is in my district. I have not heard any negative comments about it. That's also Senator Rings. So with that, are there any objections? Seeing none, we'll have the bill move forward. Thank you very much. Happy holidays. Appreciate you waiting. Sorry to get that. Okay. But reverting back now, we're going to revert back to the civil citation program. At that time, Senator Sobel did have a question. Senator Sobel, I'm not going to go.
Well, I have a question to the chief, because he's talking about some discussion and the right that youngsters who are physical with each other. Somewhere I read that when it's a state bill, by Congress, or maybe in this bill, that only deals with non-violent misdemeanors. Is that is that your reading of it? Can somebody address that, that it's non-violent misdemeanors, first offenders?
That's what the intent of the state statute, civil citation statute is, in fact, it reads, there is established juvenile civil citation process for the purpose of providing efficient and innovative alternatives to custody of the Department of Juvenile Justice for children who commit non-serious delinquent acts.
Non-serious, that's the difference. Non-violent is different than non-serious. Would you know if it's non-violent? Because you're in reference to contact with kids fighting in a home is non-violent. I mean, I'm not sure what the definition of violence is anymore. But I would think that would not be included in what the new law would say.
Well, I think if there was a fight that would constitute a domestic battery charge, you're talking
that's
about...
That's violence.
That's violence, yes.
That's violence. It doesn't apply to you. I think, Corbin...
But the intention of the misdemeanor, it's a non-violent misdemeanor. First time non-violent misdemeanor. That was the intent of the law.
So maybe that needs to be spelled out a little bit more in the local bill. Clarifying whether we're talking about a non-violent first-time misdemeanor. So there is domestic violence involved. That's not part of this intention of this bill.
Yes.
That's correct. And the bill, actually, this is the amendment that we have, is going to make reference to that domestic violence. And we will make certain that that is what's covered. Non-violent, first-time offenders, misdemeanors, not including domestic violence. Okay. And that's how it is. We will be offering up an amendment, taking into account all of the comments which have been made. We do have the issue, as Commissioner Wexler spoke earlier, regarding the funding and where we're going to place these individuals, the one you referenced before, who may not be able to find a parent at that time to come and get them. We're going to work on getting all of that funding together, but that's Broward County funding.
Thank you.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you. I just want to clarify, resisting an arrest with violence is a third-degree felony? Okay. So if you encounter an individual in a high school setting, let's say, it just happens, pushes away, my natural response is someone touches me, so I don't want to touch me, get away. That might be perceived by some law enforcement officers, as it happened, I have a case here in Miami-Dade County, or Broward County, where it was perceived as resisting an arrest with violence. We do have an orphan in Broward County who's being prosecuted by our state attorney for just that, for a third-degree felony. Where is the discretion? Should that not, that type of egregious offense not be for the civil citation program? Because those kids are getting caught up in the system, unfortunately, in that type of situation.
Would the question be, what happens at JAC? The JAC is after where they're going to determine whether that person is eligible for civil citation or not, and whether or not that is the crime that they are charged. Is that how it necessarily works out? That's my understanding.
Well, typically, a law enforcement officer who encounters someone who commits a crime will make a determination if it fits the criteria for civil citation. They'll call down to the JAC and they'll ask them if the juvenile has been through a civil citation process prior. And if they haven't, then they would be eligible for a civil citation for eligible crimes.
Okay. And once again, and just I want to reiterate, this is something we will work on to make sure that the bill incorporates all those things, because we don't want it to be a situation where this program is not utilized properly and that we don't have, as I said before, the funding. Mr. Carter, did you have a question or a comment?
Yeah, I had a comment on what Representative Edwards just asked. The intent of this bill is that we not box and you are young people's king. Now, we don't put them, everybody, in the same box. When we talked about the exceptional occurrences, what she spoke about a few minutes ago sounds to me like an exceptional, could be handled as an exceptional occurrence. There was no brutalization of anybody. It was just that the person pushed off, you know, and wanted to stand back. So that's where we talk about making exceptions and exceptions, you know, being looked at. Also, when we talk about what happens at the JAC, there is this document that I understand, and maybe the person from the state attorney's office who's going to speak will speak in reference to that document that has been prepared by the sheriff's department and gone through their legal department and is now in the state attorney's office, where I heard that it was at the last juncture. So maybe we can get some clarification on that issue as to know where that document is at this time.
I'm glad to hear that, Representative, because what we've been waiting, there has been some discussion about agreement, and then there were some legal ramifications. I'm not aware of finalizing that, but we're waiting to see that be presented to the Broward Chiefs Association, and I think we're all anxious to move forward with that, because that'll allow us to divert additional people that aren't being diverted now from arrest or civil citation.
Thank you, Chief. We appreciate you being here.
Just one last comment, if I can, just to talk about that one issue again, because it wasn't included in the amendments, but as Ms. Walker said, I'm not sure how applicable the civil citation program is that's geared just for Broward County. If we're dealing with a juvenile offender, even a first-time offender that's from a place as far away as Orlando or Tallahassee or Danville, how practical it is to manage that. So.
We're going to have to come up with some language to that. I think that was a very good point. That certainly you do. There was not a juvenile with the program, the civil citation program in another part of the state. Somehow we need to work with that.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question for the chief.
Yes, Representative Thurston.
Chief, you talked about the difficulties in working, I guess, some type of difficulties in working with the BSO on this memorandum of understanding. Did you all not have a meeting on this issue before where most of the chiefs were in agreement with the memorandum of understanding?
In concept, we did, yes. I don't know that all the chiefs were there, but we had a meeting at the JAC Center and we talked about this. It was never actually presented to and distributed to the Chiefs Association because I think internally it had to be worked through the legal department and then Broward Sheriff's Office. I think we're just waiting to receive the final draft so that we can move over with that.
And did you all also have a meeting with the state attorney's office where most of the chiefs were there and indicated that they were in agreement with this concept where BSO would handle this under certain circumstances if you were unable to reach a parent? Were you at that meeting?
Yes, sir, I was. That occurred at the same meeting. And again, we're not opposed to this. I think everybody's in agreement that this is a good thing. It's a good process. We're just waiting for that process to be finalized. And maybe I used a bad term saying that there was a problem in working this out. There really hasn't been a problem per se. It's just a question of the sheriff and his staff finalizing that, and if it's something that he's able to do, I'm sure he'll do it.
Thank you. Representative Rogers.
Thank you. Just a quick question. The chiefs work for cities. You are under contract for the city. Now, where is your elected official on these issues, especially the cities that are not participating? Where is the elected official? Why am I talking to a contract person? I know you're the professionals, but we are the visionary, we are the policy makers as elected officials. Why are you talking to those cities and they are objecting to this, or is it just the staff professionals who are objecting? Where is this pushback coming from, Chief?
There's not, I want to make it perfectly clear, there's not a pushback. We're not opposed to civil citation. I believe that there is a consensus that people believe that civil citation is a good thing.
I'm just going to, I'm going to bring this to the end at this point right here. I think what he's just saying, and just so we all are clear, is he just wants to make sure the bill reflects the comments that have been made by all of the parties so that it actually does what it is that we want it to do. And that's his intention, and he's made very clear. I've spoken with the chief a number of times a few weeks ago, unfortunately, when we canceled this meeting. He wants the program to go forward, he just wants to
do it. You took from my back on you.
That's what the chair, I'm not sure I needed to do that. I just want to make sure you do too. Thank you, Chief. We're gonna move on at this point to, and I do have a listener, Maria Schneider, who is assistant attorney general. I hope to break it. So you're going to come up and speak on her behalf. Just introduce yourself, please.
Yes, I did sign up earlier, I'm her deputy chief. My name is Cal Barra, so I'm the deputy chief of the Attorney's Office of Juvenile Unit. I've spoken to Representative Buckley on a number of times, and there's really one word that brought us all here: shall versus may. Shall versus may. The civil citation, I happened to be at the meeting when we were up in the panhandle discussing it with law enforcement agencies from all over the state. And there was a lot of blowback, and a lot of negative comments across the state initially. But I'm proud to say that that's not the case in Broward County. I've been at a lot of meetings where a lot of the law enforcement agencies are on board, and there's very positive comments. I did hear some comments about diversion and those programs we have in the Attorney's Office. We still do have the Attorney's Office programs. They're eligible for pre-trial diversion services. However, we've learned that the internet does allow certain things to be discovered. We've also learned that colleges have been more creative in the way they question students who are applying for these scholarships. So we have military branches when they're asking for whether or not they completed the diversion program. So while the record itself is expunged, the child is arrested. And that's what we're here for. We're here to stop the arrest from occurring in the first place. So once that arrest has occurred, that record that they're seeking no longer occurs. So when the child's applying for his scholarship, it's not going to say, well, have you been arrested? Did you go through the state attorney's office, the first program? Because that's what they're asking now. Even though the child can say no, there's still a record of the arrest. They're still seeking the record of the arrest. And right now, I do sign off on these funds. And I do get calls from recruiters, and I do get calls from colleges. So one of the issues here is we don't want to be. The state attorney's office is on board for certain offenses, and it's sort of the arrest itself doesn't occur. Representative Edwards did make a comment about domestic battery versus school batteries, and I didn't hear you when you said that. And there is a program in schools called the Promise Program, which they're implementing this year. That's addressing handle the school-based arrest. And as you know, and so you're not concerned, we still have our diversion programs available for those acts of misconduct that you said was resisting on a law enforcement officer where a push occurred. We have our discretion that we have now taken a step further in our exercises. We are reaching out to law enforcement officers. And I can say I personally have made phone calls to law enforcement officers. And in an instance where a law enforcement officer has not been injured, we do have the discretion to do that. I can tell you that I have personally made phone calls to the deputy chief. If my staff is doing that, please let me know and I will.
I can tell from the bio and she's going to get with you after this.
No, that's fine. Yeah, and I won't. I won't. In the restorative justice model we spoke about, it's not something new. I heard it brought up earlier. That's implemented in a lot of our programs. And the services that they're getting are tens of the services that we're providing in our programs that we've done for the city attorney's office. They're so contracted with the Children's Services Council. So the programs that, the services they're getting are services that we would have already approved in a different city. So they're getting that pre-arrest intervention. So that's one of the main things that we wanted to make clear. I don't know if anybody has any questions specifically about the city attorney's office and the law and the social service program.
I think we're good. I've been trying to move this along. I have a very chairman and I have a except for if Representative Thurston has questions, I always
I just had a quick question. The chief was talking about a situation with the jet where there would be an arrest and an unarrest. And I know that you're right, we want to avoid the initial arrest. But in a situation like that, would that be something that would interfere with the child later on if that occurred? He said something about transporting an arrest, then BSO would have an unarrest, and I don't know exactly how that works, but the situation with the scholarship later on, would that still cause that child a problem?
The way we're proposing it, no. And that's the whole issue is with the JAC, we're not trying to have them housed with the quote general population, the other children that have been arrested for serious offenses. We're trying to have them housed separately. That's the issue of funding. We at the city attorney's office do not want them housed together. We feel that they are not quote under arrest and they're not to be treated as such. So the JAC has been proposed as a centralized location between these other two, but we're not suggesting that they be commingled with the other children that have been arrested.
And that would mean that there's an arrest has not occurred.
Right.
We do need to move forward because remember we go ahead, Representative Parker, but let me just say this. We need to move it forward because we do have to revert back to the hearing and we still have other speakers who've been waiting very patiently. So please keep the comments asking questions and not comments. We're going to bring it back to that.
Mr. Evans, can you tell me where the MOU is at this time?
I believe Ms. Schneider is currently remanded. We have several law enforcement agencies in the county, and whenever concern is addressed, Ms. Schneider does actually, it's a fluid document, so it's still being finalized.
Okay, thank you. We're going to move on to one of the last speakers, Sean Sarah. The principal is Sarah, is that not or Chet?
Hi, good evening, Chair, members of the delegation. I appreciate the opportunity to address the committee. I'm also here with some friends. I have Lisa, Vince, David, and Liz, who are our executive director, city principal, and assistant principal. I represent BPAA, which is the Broward County Principal and Assistant Principal Association. We have 646 members. And I'm also the proud principal of J.P. Terrell, which is a high school just a little bit north of here. And we're the second largest high school in Broward County. And I can't, come to you today with a prepared statement. I'm only going to speak from heart. Our job is to take care of children. And today's generation has a tremendous amount of challenges ahead of them. A lot more than I had when I was a young man. And the pressure is not only to do well in high school, but get to the next level, whether that's college or university, go into the workforce is tremendous. And they're dealing with those pressures in different ways. And sometimes students make mistakes. And if it's at a misdemeanor level, we really want to try to keep those children on our property because we feel very strongly that we know them best. When they arrive on the first day to the 180th day, we're not only about teaching and learning, but we're also about personalization and getting to know them. And some of them have outstanding foundations at home, but some of them don't. And we're serving not only as educators, but we're in a lot of ways serving parents. And our job is to make sure we're correcting behavior and really getting them to the next level. So as an association, we're in full support of the language of the bill. We want to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. But we also recognize when there are serious instances that, you know, the children need the support that we can provide. So we want to be a part of this, and we come and support.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Principal. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Yes, I
Representative Thurston at the end.
I just wanted to know, I just wanted to know which schools are represented and are all the Principal Association on board.
Well, we represent 646 members, and right now 240 schools are committed to doing, to support the bill. And it's not only a school-wide initiative, but it's a district initiative. And I think it would be best if the principals and assistant principals introduce themselves, but they do a great job, and they came to support as well. So I'll turn it over to them.
Sure. Well, thank you. Come on up and introduce yourself and just...
Thank you very much. It's Leslie, Principal Cyclotron. So good to have you.
Thank you.
Good evening. Let's say I'm Assistant Principal of the Myers Education Center.
Welcome. And my name is David Watkins. I'm the Principal at Woodlawn Myers Education Center, and I'll participate in some of the work as a
Commissioner
Wexler, I am also a member of the UJJ 317 advisory board.
Thank you.
I'm Lisa Maxwell. I'm the executive director for the Broward Principals and Assistant Association. Thank you for having us.
Great. Thanks for coming. I really appreciate it. Okay. With that, at this point, we're actually going to close the public hearing. Representative Clark, I think we'll leave you having a motion you want to make to amend. Perhaps you can read what those changes are, the amendments to this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if the rest of the members have this in front of them, but the first amendment that I would like to make is that with the approval of a parent or guardian, and in section 1, after shall issue a civil citation on line 14, with approval of a parent or guardian, the approval of a parent or guardian may be obtained subsequent to an arrest, whereupon the juvenile will be released to the custody of the parent or guardian.
And that would be, that's in addition to section 1, after the shall issue a civil citation on line
14.
And you have a second part?
And the second is add to section 2, after the last sentence. However, a law enforcement officer within Broward County shall arrest a juvenile in the case of a domestic violence incident, and a law enforcement officer within Broward County may arrest a juvenile in exceptional circumstances articulated by the law enforcement officer that makes issuance of a civil citation inappropriate due to a risk of to the public safety.
Thank you. Okay, we have an amendment to make my motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made and seconded. Although this is just not a bill, this is just a...
Mr. Chairman, if I might just interject for one moment. Understand that section 1 of what it reads, it would require the approval of a parent or guardian each time that a juvenile was issued a civil citation. My understanding from the testimony was that certain times they don't ask for approval of parents. Now, perhaps I'm wrong, but that's what I've heard. The chief.
Well, let's do it one by one. Somebody, I didn't hear. Does anybody know the answer to that? Is there anybody up here? Can you restate that Gene, so that
somebody? My understanding from the chief was that he used an example of a child that was, say, 13, which gave me the impression that a child of 16 or 17, they would not require the approval of a guardian.
That's not true.
Okay, let's see if we can get an answer from that.
The way it's written is, it has, the child has to agree to participate. And the way it's being applied is, what the chief was referring to, is that because of the age of the child, they want to have the parent and the child to agree to the participation.
So there are certain times that they require?
No, it's not. It's not certain times. It's all.
Let's, okay, fine, and that's fine. We're going to, and I'm just going to, okay. And what we have then, we have a motion and a second. This is a vote just on the amendment, not on the bill as amended yet. So if you are in favor of the amendment, say aye. Aye. Opposed? Showing none, show the amendment passed unanimously. Now, what we will have is a discussion related to the bill as amended. Once again, I want to reiterate, before we have the vote and further discussion, I have made the commitment to all the interested parties out of the audience, as well as to those members up here who I've talked to, that if we do not have the consensus and agreement of all the parties by the time this goes to the floor, we will not move forward with a vote on the floor of the House. That being said, I will open it up. Representative Buckley, I'll let you go last because you're essentially the bill sponsor. We're doing this the same as we would in any committee meeting. Senator Sobel?
What?
No, she's the bill sponsor, so she gets the close.
All right, thank you. Looks like these are some of the concerns that the chief brought up and addressed in this amendment. And thank you to staff for getting this done. I'm sorry it wasn't in the bill, but I believe we've addressed some of you joined us here today. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, okay, what were you? What we're going to do.
Because this is running the same. So now we have your support so we can go forward and advocate.
What we're looking for at this point is if you've got comments. Gene, did you have something you wanted to say?
Yeah, I just wanted to know if the delegation would want to consider two more things that was brought up. Did you want to insert the word non-violent before the word misdemeanor on line 13? And did you wish to, after the word juvenile, on line 12, add the words whose residence is within Broward, Miami-Dade, or Palm Beach County?
As it relates to the first one, I think if we need to do that, we can do that as we go forward, if that's it. But I thought you and I had spoken before. We do reference the section for statute 985 or maybe that already talks about it. But if we do need to do it as we go forward, we can handle that amendment down the road. As it relates to the other issue of the counties, I think we ought to just wait and have a little bit more discussion first to find out how it's handled in other areas. It would be the same as probation, essentially, where if you move from one county to another and you're on probation, you'd report it.
I think what the chief was saying is that if there's a juvenile, for instance, from an out of state or a juvenile from upstate, that it would be very difficult for them to require the citation.
Right, and we're not disagreeing. That's something we have to figure out how to incorporate, but I don't want to do it just on the fly right now. I'd rather we sit back and get the stakeholders involved. I've got Senator Saxon and Senator Sobel.
Very quickly, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's important that we understand that this is the jurisdiction of law enforcement, the sheriff in this county, for any incidents that occur in this county, regardless of who the person is, where they come from. If a crime is committed in this county, and the sheriff of this county and the law enforcement have jurisdiction to decide whether or not a crime has been committed. So, regardless of where somebody resides and where they're coming from, if you commit a crime in Broward County, you're going to be in the jurisdiction of Broward County. So, regardless of where the person lives, this has to stay the way it is today. And I do think it does need a little work in the hopes that I think it's a great idea, and I need to move forward.
Great, thank you. Senator Sobel, you're next, and this is one shot at it.
Okay, well, I want to ask Senator Saxon, who knows much more than I do about this area,
you mean to say that the sheriff cannot send that kid back? If the crime is committed here, that they must be prosecuted here, they cannot be shipped back to their county where they live, they can, that's part of the law now.
My understanding of the law, and I've got a very good criminal defense attorney right here with us, Representative Thurston. My understanding of the law is that you commit a crime here, you answer here. You can't say, I'm going back to New York, or I'm going to Long Beach County. You answer to that crime here, and you're in the jurisdiction of the law and law enforcement of Broward County. So, a lot of people like to leave, not to the community crime, but they're subject to the laws of Broward County, and we have that jurisdiction, and I think this is an excellent idea. Thank you, Commissioner Wexler, for bringing it up, and Representative Clyde Reed, and I think it's excellent to move forward.
General Thurston, did you want to add?
Yeah, thank you. I just want to join the Senator Sachs in thanking Representative Clyde Reed as well as Commissioner Wexler for a great deal. And I know there's been a lot of help that put this together, and NAACP and others. But I just want to thank them. And on the issue of whether the jurisdiction is here, jurisdiction is here. You probably heard sometimes that someone who can commit a crime here may have their probation or their supervision transferred to another state. That can happen, but even with that, the jurisdiction still remains in Broward County. And if they did that, they would have a probation officer maybe in New York. But the main case, if they were to violate, they would come back here again. So jurisdiction does remain in Broward County. Supervision sometimes may be transferred to another state or another county. That happens all the time.
Thank you for the lesson.
Okay, Senator, so do you have any more comments?
I have one more comment about the non-violent. I thought the state bill said non-violent first degree misdemeanor. That needs to be checked, but I think non-violent makes it more palatable to, I would think, to a lot of people in the community as well as the state bank bill.
Right. And those were the instructions we're giving to Gene. He's going to check to just make sure that it encompasses that. We believe that if it's not, we will insert those, the words not allowed. Representative Rogers, do you have any comments?
Quick comments. We're interchanging the word juveniles and minor, and sometimes you're thinking that juvenile can just walk out just by signing a document, and if you're under 18, I think you're not allowed to sign anything, so all of this talk back and forth is confusing to me because I still believe, no matter what, parental participation in everything with a child under their jurisdiction, living in their house, under 18, that's parents who are totally responsible. So I just wanted to make those comments and hope that is captured in how we talk and interchange minor, juvenile, parental participation is what we're looking for.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. You said, Representative Carter, you recognize the close on yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to thank my fellow members for seeing the necessity of us moving this bill forward. But I do want you to know that my bill that is in the State House will remain there, will remain filed to change that word from may to shall, because we need the same thing happening across the state of Florida to all of our young people. And thank you, Representative Rogers, for that wordsmithing, juvenile and minor. Really appreciate that. As we go along, I'm sure that there are going to be some other changes possibly to this bill, as we hopefully will get the MOU, because it has been now almost 1 year that we have been talking about this MOU, that we will hopefully get that in place, and I hope the state attorney's office listening very closely, because as far as I'm concerned, that is where the holdup is for this bill, for this taking place across Broward County, if we are able to get this legislation passed. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Parker. Representative Parker, we have made the motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Representative Rogers. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Showing
Seeing none, heard a motion, bill passed unanimously, taken forward as amended. Thank you very much. We are going to have, once again, I apologize to people who have delayed before, but we're going to revert back now to the public comment of Rafael Jimenez, Florida County Drinking and Products Association. Here. Mr. Deputy. Come on down. Good afternoon, everyone. My comments are pretty anticlimactic compared to that last round, but thank you very much for the opportunity to be here. My name is Rafael Jimenez, and I am a professional engineer on behalf of the Florida Concrete and Products Association. I'm here to emphasize the reasons why Portland cement concrete pavements presents a sustainable solution for community development when used in streets, roadways, and parking lots. There are, in fact, multiple reasons why concrete is a durable and sustainable pavement solution. I present some of these reasons to you so that moving forward, this delegation will encourage future development projects to at least consider and evaluate concrete pavement options. It is commonly recognized by engineering and construction professionals that Portland cement concrete pavements compare favorably to other pavement materials with regards to durability and longevity. In general, they tend to perform very well with low maintenance and commonly exceed their design life. Concrete is a completely domestic Florida-produced material. Almost every cubic yard of Portland cement concrete used here in Florida is extracted, manufactured, and delivered by a Florida resident. My goal here today is just to raise awareness. I simply want to make you aware of the homegrown advantages of concrete pavements. Because of the volatility and escalation of petroleum markets, concrete pavements are now more cost-effective than ever when compared to other paving materials. Although there were large price discrepancies in the past, comparably designed concrete pavements can now be constructed at cost equivalent to other paving materials. The Florida Concrete and Products Association simply hopes that you will encourage new development projects under your influence to evaluate concrete options, if for no other reason than to bring increased competition to future pavement projects, competition that can only bring value to our community. Thank you very much. Thank you. Representative Gibbs, don't go away yet. Representative Gibbs has got a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Has not the issue been that concrete costs less over a period of time, but initially the cost is higher? So when considering the FTOP, when considering concrete for road paving, the issue has been that if a normal cement road lasts 10 years, concrete lasts 20 years, concrete costs $15, cement costs $10, it's not that concrete less costly for a longer period of time. Has that not been the issue?
One of the issues has been a discrepancy in the design life between various paving materials. So concrete may tend to be more expensive, but at the same time, its design life may tend to be longer when evaluated in that comparison. Does that address your question, sir?
That addresses exactly, because that's the argument that we would have to FTOP for the last number of years.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, Dale Barnstable, Select BioVentures. Are you here? Hold him down. Eric Eichenberg. Eric? I never saw Eric here. Was he here earlier? Okay. Dan Wheatley.
He's here.
Catch the senator before she left there. Excuse me.
My name's Dale Martin Sable. I have a handout here that I think is very interesting. We're up in North Palm Beach. I made the rounds. We're working on a Florida-focused venture capital fund. The goal is that Florida, with the addition of Scripps and Max Planck and some of the innovation parks, is invested in a research platform. What we have going on right now is a maturation of our universities. I don't want to go into it. We have four universities in the top 35 in the country in terms of patents produced. California is the only one with more. With the addition of the institutes, we have some of the finest institutes in the world that we've brought in here. Our incubator system is not only nationally recognized, the Central Florida is one of the best, but the Sid Martin incubator was named the best incubator in the world. So what happened, we have great research parks like up in Boca, that's why I try to catch a center there, mining innovation, etc. So where do we lack? And here's some data on patents as far as life science, it shows Florida as number 8. To commercial all of this with venture capital or with early stage seed programs. California has something called their iHub. This page looks very much like theirs, and their hubs are their research parks. But where do we lack? If you go to the third page, you'll see the venture capital numbers. And I have another sheet. I didn't want to overwhelm you all. We've got so much time to talk to NIH funding. We get $500 million a year. California's getting $3.5 billion. Florida's about 12. I've addressed this with the federal people. I think with some more aggressive efforts and teamwork, those numbers could go up significantly. We've attracted the top scientists in the world. Now, if you look at the last sheet that I've given you, California expands IHUB program. They just recently passed Assembly Bill 250 to create 4 new hubs and to create programs for new homegrown startup businesses that create the bulk of California's jobs. Now, myself, I've been over to Fort Myers, I've been up to St. Lucie, I've been to Miami, I'm here on the Bahamas tomorrow. It's a team effort. I think this is, we're all as strong as each piece. And I think that, you know, the hotel hospitality, retirement atmosphere that we've built here over 35 to 40 years will always go on. But I think that Florida is also poised to become a worldwide leader in science, technology, and innovation if we can get the right elements pulled together and make it happen.
Thank you. Questions?
And I've done 2 studies that I did send to the governor's office that are available for anyone. I compared our platform to 15 other states, and then I compared the whole environment with the patents, the NIH funding, and the venture capital. Yes, ma'am.
Representative Sobel.
Hello, ma'am.
Thank you. Sorry.
Thank you, sir. All your venture capital funds are private funds, or is the federal, is the state money included?
What we're working on is to go out and raise private funds. We've approached and we talked to Senator Ring before. There's been some programs like the Florida Opportunity Fund that was set up for that. Unfortunately, that money went to California and some other out-of-state locations, so it didn't end up here. The Growth Fund, which was sort of created out of a SHAGA recommendation, they're more of a latter stage, we would almost call private equity kind of fund. So it's not funding any of the research and innovation coming from there. What we're trying to get the state to recognize is you've got to have programs for startup seed companies similar to like what California has. And if you need to get some either large corporate investors or can't go out of state and ask, let's say, the New York State Teachers Pension Fund, would you invest in a Florida fund? And the first thing they're going to say is, how much money from within the state of Florida? Does it doesn't mean it comes from the state. It just means from institutions or
you're saying the state money that you haven't gotten?
There's programs. We've addressed it with those programs. There's you know, we're saying there's a need.
Could you just answer my question? You know, yes or no? Did you get any state money and where did it come from?
We did not.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Stark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hopefully, I'm not going to, the particular answer you just had is not what I was looking for. You talked about the right elements. So, this is a multiple question. What are some of those right elements? Do you think they're achievable? And does it encounter or work with higher education? Is that part of the issue also?
Well, I think the higher education side of it with the universities is evident by, I said we have four of the top 35 math producing universities. Two of them are UCF and USF. That 25 years ago, they weren't even on the map in terms of those numbers, which means the evolution. We've just gotten a large IIT grant. I know you're a Nova, which is in this area. The elements are, you've got an incubator system to launch these sort of spin-outs or ideas. Even if an entrepreneur wants to move there, the first thing he's going to look for is, where can I go to get that seed or angel money? And that's why so many of them end up in California, because they have such a robust venture capital network, but they also have quite a successful university network where they're driving off that NIH funding. Now, that's a federal issue. You have to affect more people in your district that you think, hey, since I put this information over, I really said I took this to the Rubio's office in Nelson. Many people's eyes were open that, wait a minute, the University of North Carolina gets as much money as the whole state of Florida. Duke University, Pittsburgh University, there's sort of been an inequality because we haven't been streamlined. The other elements are the research parts. You've got to have places where when a company grows, where can you go next for facilities? And then you do end up at a point where you're an industrial park. The other elements are people like Bob Swindell, Andrew Duffel at the research park, Kelly Smallridge at the Palm Beach Business Development Board, people down at the BP Council. You've got the people that know how to do it, and now it just gets into focus and streamlined efforts to help create the spin-out companies. A lot of them now, they go up to North Carolina and go to some other state and say, find the capital and get off the ground.
Does geography play into it at all? Like you take the Boston area, you've got a lot of top universities, you've got open. The Ivy League schools, and then you've got some other technological big companies there, California, around San Francisco, got lots of areas. And Florida, what kind of spread out? You've got the University of Florida in the north, you've got Nova down here, and, is it that we are too spread apart, but also with the universities as well, aside from not having like Harvard or Yale down here as well?
Well, I would put the University of Florida, they're around the top 10 or 11, so they are, and I think Miami has a significant amount of potential too, and so do all the others, so I don't mean to not mention names. The spread out part, that's why I recommended the iHub example, because these hubs, these parks that they have in California are spread all over the state, and several of them have different focuses. And some of them might be clean, green energy. Not everything is Silicon Valley technology based. So sometimes being spread out, and when it's early, that might be a little bit troublesome. But in the bigger picture, it kind of brings everybody into the game. And one of the things that is happening with the Institute investment we made is that the big farms right now are looking to the university institute level for their early stage R&D. They are actually dropping out. So the timing of what was done by Governor Bush when he did it has actually worked out. The timing of when the market crashed was not, because raising capital for risk type projects became very tough. And then the first thing they want to see is, what's the success history down in Florida? Well, we're new. But, this state has gotten the fourth sports guy. Nobody would have thought this would be a basketball state.
Thank you. Representative Edwards.
Thank you very much.
Representative Edwards, I think she has a question. She might have a question, but I'm not sure what her comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm hoping you can go back to your venture capitalist and research when you bring up California, D.C., New York, I think Kansas. And we have a bill coming up next month. or the current criminal justice subcommittee that redefines cannabis. A big part of the focus has been taking a crop, giving it to your great universities and having that connection with your pharmaceuticals, your researchers, doctors, and like the Scripps or Planck Center, being able to derive an extract and market it as a safe, effective product, not leaving it on the street. So we're looking for that type of experience from companies who want to come forward and invest in that type of research and development for the emerging agricultural commodity as
well. Well, and as I talk about healthcare and biotech, there is biocrops. There is technology, and those types of Monsantos and those types of companies do invest heavily in other regions. And I, for one, have never understood why did we get out, I mean, you all, others, and cultivate them, because we do have a separate a crop issue of having to replenish, et cetera. I'm hearing that when I was over at Boone County last week with the same discussion where I went over there, I said, everybody's involved, everybody's in the game. And I think we can build this together. If it starts from the bottom up, and I think the potential here is tremendous.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate you. Is there anybody here from the Other Place Foundation? Rebecca, she's not here. Dan Weekly, for the Transportation and Village Association.
Good evening. I'm Daniel Weekly. I'm my brother Jerry Jr. with me. My two brothers and I have run our company Weekly Asphalt Paving for the last 24 years. My father started the business in 1947, 67 years ago, and we are located in Pembroke Pines. We have approximately 210 employees. Our company is very fortunate to historically, over the years, done most of the work with the Department of Transportation. Secretary Matt Passard and his team does an excellent job for the taxpayers of the state of Florida. And the current chairman of the Florida Transportation Builders Association, Bob Wilson, our president, was not able to be here tonight. I'm here to urge you to continue to protect the state transportation fund and to put more money into transportation when we do revenue budget surpluses. This will lead to economic development and stimulate our economy and create jobs. I thank you for speaking to you now.
Thank you. Any questions? We'd like to make a comment. Unfortunately, the legislature, the leadership of the legislature, always seems to want to take the money out of the transportation trust funds to spend it somewhere else. We always vote against it. We always think that trust funds ought to go to where the money is.
It should be a trust fund.
That's right. And so it should be a little bit of trust in the trust funds. Representative, what's your comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Weekly, for your service to the community. One of the things that's been in the news recently is a proposal by the governor to reduce license tax fees. And can you talk about the relationship between those increases, I think we're looking at $25 in 2009 that was passed, and this relationship to the transportation budget on the different projects we see here in the state?
Well, I wouldn't be able to speak on that. Sorry. So, Bob could do that better than that, but I know the tax money, it's supposed to go into transportation as far as, that's what we like to do. So.
I'd like you to know I voted against those fees coming out.
If I could have one more second, I would speak as an asphalt contractor and not as an everyday chairman. The pavement, the concrete pavement, people try to make asphalt and concrete political. It shouldn't be a political issue. It should be up to the experts to determine the availability of it. The only way that they can compete, in my opinion, is to make it political, and that's what they tried to do. The department 2 years ago, Lloyd Joplin, year 27, in Palm Beach County, wanted to commit to give concrete a good bid against asphalt, taking into consideration the life of the pavement. It came asphalt, I don't quote me on the exact numbers, were like 3 to 4 million, concrete was 15 million, and for the same job, and didn't even compete. But all that, the thing, the point I would make, whether it's concrete pad, aluminum pad, asphalt concrete, whatever the state uses in their roads, for any construction should not be political. It should be left up to the experts that we all pay as taxpayers. And what, the Florida Transportation takes a lot of heat, but I've worked for them for 44 years, and the various organizations, I think the whole country was ran the way RIPOD has been ran since I've been involved. This whole country would be better off. I know they take a lot of heat from a lot of people, but I promise you, they do an excellent job. And I'm not on that team, but I do enjoy working for them. He's an honest, hard-working peach.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Wheatley. We do think the employees working for the state are very hard-working and deserving. Thank you. Next, I have Ken Reimer for the AARP.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the delegation. I'd like to briefly go over AARP's legislative interest for the upcoming session. The first of which is assisted living facilities. There have been some efforts to pass bills, unfortunately, that didn't work out during the past session, yet the need still remains. The need for reform is as great as it ever has been, if not more so. A greater number of unlicensed facilities exist today, and action, not just discussion, needs to be focused on prevention and early intervention so that abuse, neglect, and harm are minimized, if not eliminated. So we urge you to revisit that this next time around and see where we can go with that. The next item is home and community-based services. AARP hopes that the legislature will consider devoting more share of the Medicaid funds to home and community-based services. It was good to see no cuts in that area last year. Very happy with that. And authorization was given to AHCA to be able to transfer funds from institutional care to home and community-based alternatives. It's good for the individuals. Roughly 90% of us at GH want to stay in our homes. It's a good deal for the state because the cost to help people in their homes is much less than in institutions providing 24/7 care. Many people who are in nursing homes don't really need to be there. They don't need that degree of care. They can function well with limited assistance at home for a fraction of the cost. Utilities. AARP supports fair, affordable, and reasonable utility rates as well as reliable and accessible service for all Floridians. Last session, the legislature passed a bill that improves the review and the approval process for advanced nuclear cost recovery. We support the repeal of the Advanced Nuclear Cost Recovery Statute of 2006. And believe there's so much work to be done to ensure that consumers aren't left holding the bag should utility not proceed with a plan that they've been collecting funds on. And finally, it's always good to be number one, but not in fraud. We still seem to be an epicenter, if not the epicenter for fraud in Florida. Accordingly, we'd like to see consumer protections against perpetrators, scams, and fraud in general enhanced, especially for seniors who are often more susceptible to the scams that are out there. So I thank you for your interest, and if you have further questions,
I can handle them or let this way to move up and die.
And we'd just like to know if you can pick out which one of the members here is not eligible for AARP.
I'm not going there.
There's only one. Thank you very much. Last one, Jim Moyer, Community Outreach for the Salvation Army.
Good evening. My name is Jim. Mr. Jim, members of the delegation. My name is Jim. I've had the privilege of working for Salvation Army for the last 17 years. I'm here to speak again about the set of practices. And the last time I was here, I became very aware about how passionate the delegation is about public perception. And I've given you an article here, basically, that a Florida-based organization, Clothing Recycler, here in South Florida, that was, pretty nicely, asked to leave the state of Ohio because of deceptive practices. That very same organization, from my understanding, began and is all over a little bit Miami-Dade County and also Palm Beach County. I'm here asking for support of charities and to eliminate deceptive practices. The second thing I included is the National Transit Sports only allows charities and not to allow for-profits when it comes to clothing and recycling. Third item I included is the 2011 session bill that came before the legislature, which unfortunately didn't get out of committee. My job would have been a lot easier if it had passed. This is a national issue. I left a meeting a few hours ago with a representative of another national charity who began working on this issue in Miami-Dade County in the 1990s. They spent years passing the county ordinance down there, and they've been continuing to work on this issue ever since the 1990s. It keeps popping, raising its head up and up. We have for-profit cyclists coming from other states and some right here. I'd ask for your support. I'm looking for basically four things in a state or local bill for this area. I'm emphasizing local bill because South Florida is affected because of our two great ports here. The bill should include, in my view, a county or municipal permit. It should be a nationally recognized charity. They should definitely have permission of a property owner, which a lot of these people are not getting. They're just dropping boxes. And also, it should be for public disclosure through the organization what the cost is. Thank you so much for your support, and God bless you all.
Thank you, and appreciate you for being here. Is there anybody else in the audience? I don't have anybody else signed up, or if I missed anybody who was on the list and didn't call you in or call anyone here. Okay, seeing none, that will actually close out public participation. I want to send our thanks once again to the City of Tamarack for hosting us. The legislative delegation will likely have one more public hearing in late February on gaming matters. I'd also like to let you know that our interim executive director, Lisa Aronson, she's down there, will be finishing up her term as interim at the end of this month, so I want to thank her very much for all of her efforts in helping us out. In February, I'm anticipating that Sandy Harris will be coming back to help us out during the session. If there are any issues come up in the meantime, during that time, just until then, please continue to contact Faith, and she'll help us out. I would like to wish everybody happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year,
Remember, those of you who have an interest in gaming issues, that the National Council of Legislators from Gaming States, of which I am president, is meeting in January at the Diplomat Hotel, January 10th to the 12th. Be great to have you all sign up and come. Did you have a comment, Representative Rodney? Go ahead.
And thank you for giving me the opportunity to just say to my colleague and dear friend, Commissioner Tommy Borsett, thanking him for staying the duration of this meeting. And I have a charge for you, because the question was asked of the $20 million that was given to Habitat for Humanities, for, and I heard that Broward County allocation is over $900,000. So we need to know what Habitat is doing here in Broward County. And if you could take that back to the lead for me, I've been trying to get an answer. And this is my third meeting trying to get an answer about what Habitat for Humanities is doing with their $20 million and what they're doing in Broward County. So I charge you. And thank you, everyone.
I'll try to get you that answer. I was actually going to recognize him as an outstanding elected official for actually having stayed for an entire legislative delegation. I don't know if that's ever been done before, and so we will have a trophy for you at the next meeting, and we look forward to presenting you. So thank you so much for being here. If there's no further business, Representative Schwartz, if you would indicate you have business, or are you just doing something else? We're closing with prayer. Thank you very much, everybody, for coming, and appreciate it. I have to be here.